Welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast, philosophies and strategies for an elevated life. I'm Tom.
And I'm Paulie. We interview world authorities and experts in health and wellness optimization, psychology and spirituality.
And we don't mind chewing the fat either, just the two of us.
If you feel like being part of a casual yarn about self-awareness and growth, pull up a chair because the coffee's still hot.
We'll see you on the inside. All right, team, welcome back to the podcast. We're doing a deep dive, a shoot the shit episode with my good friend, Paulie. Paulie, how are you, sir?
I'm very, very well, my man. How is life with you, Tommy?
Life is very good. And I think today's podcast is very pertinent to where the curriculum of my life is guiding me at the moment. I think as someone who's always kind of struggled to find peace without distraction, you know, our angle of the podcast today being finding that that productivity, that awareness, that acceptance of boredom as a teacher, and what it can teach you is something that's really coming up a lot with me at the moment. I think, you know, I reckon it was maybe 6 or 7 shows ago I was talking about how, despite the fact that I love meditation, I don't necessarily have a stringent practice or a daily routine mm-hmm. with it, but it's become very important for me within the past week, just to settle into my mind, you know, and just given the abundance of distraction and stimuli out there in this day and age, coming back to who I am, what I believe in, what I thought about certain pieces of content that sprung forth upon the phone, you know, the types of conversations I had, it's becoming much more of a necessity for me to find my center point again. So I'm really looking forward to discussing this with you today, mate.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. So, like, we were talking about this just earlier before we pressed record, and the sense is, like, you know, what is boredom, and is that, like, kind of a lost art in today's day and age? I know for me, I get caught into this cycle and this trap of constantly needing to tap into the stimulus, this smorgasbord of stimulus that we have available to us in the modern world that we live in. Podcasts, music, Spotify is like this, like, just this plug-in matrix that we can just constantly have into our brains and not have to have, like, an independent thought without it. And it comes under the guise of education or entertainment, but there's something about stillness and silence that activates the centers in your brain that you may feel is boredom at very first, but really once you start delving into it, and as you mentioned, you know, like delving into the space between the notes, that you can really, really starts to nourish you, that stillness. So
yeah,
whilst initially that is boredom, what does boredom kind of turn into?
Exactly. And that's a really great point to make, I think, because a lot of people will hear boredom and not necessarily with the words, but they will, it will bring them to this sense of, you know, how can I describe boredom? It's kind of like this abundance of time in a moment, with many things that one could do without necessarily being able to see which is better than the other, you know? So you can't make a value judgment about 10 different things you could do right now. So therefore you find yourself in this state of deciding. You're just constantly deciding, but you're never actually choosing what to do. It's Netflix to a T, isn't it? I could watch that. I could watch that. But it's all just 5 out of 10s. There's no movie that's hitting me right now, you know?
It's interesting. And the question around that is When back in the day when The Simpsons were on once a week, you know, at 7 o'clock or 7:30, it's like, did you appreciate and did you value and did you rate that episode at a much higher rate because it wasn't available and you didn't have, you know, another episode that you could just have at your fingertips? You know, we have so many things available to us. Then does that impact our relationship with our viewing of, let's use Netflix as an example, you know?
Yeah.
This whole paradigm that we've stepped into is like this analysis paralysis because we have so much at our fingertips, we can't actually knuckle down and kind of say, I'm here, I'm present, I am either listening to a piece of music, but truly listening to it for what it is. Simply, like we said before, just sitting in silence, going for a walk, listening to the wind in the trees, listening to the rain coming down because there's a buckload of it right now in Melbourne. Yeah. You know, like we've lost that. It's like a lost art appreciation for the simpler things in life.
I mean, you know, one of my favorite quotes was it's in the intro to my favorite book by Aldous Huxley, which is Brave New World. And that whole book, for people who don't know, was just basically a giant metaphor for kind of, you know, many of the ways which we live now. You know, everyone is happy all the time, which speaks to that idea, is a slave if he doesn't know he's a slave? Mm. They take a pill called Soma, and they're happy all the time. And because they're happy all the time, the powers that be are able to enforce just the worst work on people. And there's a hierarchical system, and the protagonist kind of breaks free from all of that. But in the introduction to the book, the writer is talking about, you know, the pill, the Soma pill. And he says, in a world where nothing has any, value, no meaning can be derived. And that's very true, you know, and to use your point perfectly, as someone who grew up literally watching The Simpsons, I couldn't wait to get home on a Friday night because it was so fun. And that was often embedded in going to Video Busters to get a VHS tape, you know, and even the pain of having to rewind it to the start because someone, you know, didn't afford that to you.
Yeah, you're like, oh my God, they didn't rewind it again.
That's it. But even that, Netflix has added that convenience and just play from the start, you know, and that's good. And convenience is good to a T. You know, taking a slight tangent, capitalism has pulled us from the dirt. And capitalism can be tyrannical, of course, but it's lifted a lot. You know, even places like Africa are so much better off than they were 150 years ago. But this constant rush to convenience has taken away the meaning and the fulfillment that comes from earning a reward, you know. And we actually kind of have to reverse engineer and engage in that pain consciously now just to find that homeostasis and balance.
100%. And Netflix is like, you said that they've, gotten to a point where you don't even need to rewind it. They take it one step further. They automatically play the next episode if you don't actively turn it off. So they've tapped in and understood and known, like, next episode is going to play in 3, 2, 1, and then you go down. It's like, you know, they tap into your subconscious as to you like this, people that watch this also like this, you know. So if you don't do the thinking for you, this technology is going to do it for you. You know? And some people will say that's convenient, and it is convenient, but like sometimes convenience is not the answer. Right. You know, reminds me of a quote that I read by one of, you know, a great bass player, Victor Wooten, and he talks about the space in between the notes that really is the magic behind the music. And recently been taking a very deep dive into my one of my favorite bands, especially back in the 90s, were the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And
oh, nice.
Rick Rubin was the producer of what I feel is an absolute masterpiece, Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
Oh, great album.
And he delved deep into conversation with all four members, and he was talking to John Frusciante and Flea, and he was talking to them about, basically they were saying, you know, before Blood Sugar Sex Magik, they had this ability to play, and there were these children, and they would fill this incredible music up with notes and passion and desire and can-do attitude. But once they started to refine their style and create this space in between the notes, all of a sudden a masterpiece was unraveled. And it's like, if I can use that as an analogy to be able to kind of like peel back the layers of life and actually sometimes, you know, remove the details and the stimulus. Yeah. And once you have that ability to be able to breathe and, yes, at times be bored, but what comes from that boredom? Like, what will come as a result of those spaces in between the notes of your day, you know? So if you don't have that ability to contemplate, to breathe and to be bored, then nothing else will come of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And, you know, one of the ways I see, I didn't actually know Rick Rubin produced Blood Sugar Sex Magik. That's awesome. That's such a good album. That one.
That was his starting, the start of his relationship with the Chili Peppers, and he's done a hell of a lot.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. I think, you know, a lot of this is speaking to the polarity, you know, however you want to call it, yin and yang, light, dark, stimulus and processing, sleep and wakefulness. We're awake all the time. And, you know, to be somewhat esoteric, we can't see anything because we're just too much in the trees. And even I noticed that one of the people who I love following is Naval Ravikant. And he talks about how meditation for him isn't necessarily some sort of practice. It's just sitting in silence, you know, and he kind of uses the metaphor that sitting in silence is akin to slowly starting to work through the inbox of your life. And if you've never touched your emails, there's going to be a whole bunch of spam, a whole bunch of people who are really angry at you. And then in there, you've got to sift through all of that, but you might find some gold, people that really loved a piece of content you made, someone who wants you on their podcast, a potential job opportunity. But you have to sift through everything in order to find those nuggets. And meditation or sitting in silence is kind of like that. You do have to be bored and get used to being bored at base level so that you can allow nuggets of wisdom to come through. Because the coolest thing about ideas, in my opinion, is that people who change the world go off ideas that have been out there for a long time, but they make it their own. You know, you can even look back at the way Fred Astaire danced and just how much of Michael Jackson is in Fred Astaire. But Michael Jackson took elements of that and then made it his own. Now, there'd be no Michael Jackson without Fred Astaire, but there'd be no Michael Jackson without Michael Jackson.
Spot on. I love that. And, you know, that opens up a question of like, what is plagiarism? What is copying? What is plagiarism? What is inspiration? Well, you know, there is nothing without inspiration. You know, there's no, I don't know, there's no Kiss without the Beatles, but there's no Beatles without bloody, you know, Robert Johnson, you know, we can keep on going further or Elvis, and you go further and further back until, you know, you're in Africa doing tribal dancing together, you know?
Yep.
So I suppose, you know, if you use inspiration, you know, that will get you to wherever you are, but like, it's also just justification as well. And we can go further down that. I don't know how we got to physical inspiration,
often the case.
but here we are. And you discussed something earlier, reminding me of a quote, a really, really powerful quote, that I was told a while back now. And that's a man born blind doesn't know what it's like to experience darkness.
Beautiful.
And it's like, if you don't have that polarity, if you don't understand what it looks like on the other side of the fence, then you can't appreciate what you have right here and now.
Absolutely. It's amazing, isn't it? That idea of always wanting to have something to do, leading to boredom, because then now all of a sudden you've got so many things you can do and none of them, back to my original point, you know, seems valuable or important because it's a whole bunch of things. You know, a videotape, a really scratchy VHS tape, you know, that you bought, and you know, we used to rent, you get this deal at Video Easy, I'll never forget, it was like seven weekly movies. I think you get like a one new release movie or something before DVDs. It was like under $10 or something. We'd often get a pizza
all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so good. Love it was so good. But even there, you see the value hierarchy, and we would more often than not watch the new release first. Mm. But even in that business model was like, you've only got this new release perhaps overnight or for 3 days.
Yeah.
So scarcity does create a value hierarchy. And now without any scarcity, it's like, well, who am I? What do I do? So what we want to do back to boredom and the power behind it is remove all the things that we could do to find what it is that we can do. And if you want to really bring this down into your life, your mission, your purpose, who you want to be, why boredom is necessary, David Deida, who's very important in my life as a spiritual teacher, I love his books. He said, if you want to find your purpose, shove yourself in a room for 3 days without any windows and stimuli and see what comes to you and tell me what it is that after those 3 days you just have to do and cannot wait to get out of that room to do or begin whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, that's such a wonderful idea. It's like, yeah, but you got to be bored for 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to do that?
And that's what I hear over and over again about the Vipassana experience. You know, you go through this enormous textual conversation in your own mind. You go through the anxiety, physical anxiety, mental anxiety, spiritual anxiety. But more often, for a lot of people, there's that breakthrough moment. But in order to get to that breakthrough moment, you need to go through all this chaos and shit before it, because it's not. It's not just a, you don't just go straight to the happy ending, you
sure,
know?
Sure.
You need to go through this, this challenge, this difficulty to break through something.
Mate, you, as someone who has done a Vipassana retreat, could you talk about your own experiences with that? I think that'd be really, valuable.
So I've never actually done a Vipassana, retreat. I did a 10-day silent meditation retreat, a few of them actually, meditation retreats. Mm-hmm. Difference between Vipassana and these retreats were that there was some form of external stimulus. We would learn about Buddhist teachings, and then we would meditate on those teachings. So
nice.
There was something tangible for us to gnaw on in our in our mind. Whereas from what I understand, Vipassana is really just about centering your breath and just you're there, you're naked, and you are like just breathing.
Days
for 7 days. So, my experience was incredible. I loved it for that particular point in my time, which was exactly your age.
Yeah.
Right now, Tommy, was when I found myself in India, probably going on a life changing trajectory, and it was magical. It was incredible, and it was just simple, but life altering.
Well, I mean, this is our point, though. Simplicity affords you the opportunity to go deep, not wide. And you can get to the, when you remove all the obstacles, you can go really, really, really far on that one thing. This is kind of like the point that I make with, because I do couples counseling, along with working with individuals. And I wrote a blog about this, but something that really comes up a lot in this day and age, as you can imagine, is polyamory, you know, or being single again. Usually this conversation happens with an individual who is in a struggling relationship. And I might just give that that point there, that usually the greener grass becomes greener when we're in a point of pain. But I really spent a long time like trying to think about this, you know. With the rise of social media, it's easier to see greener grass, you know, no matter what domain we're speaking in here. But people are like, well, you know, people do it now, you know, thruples is a thing. Having one partner and then having a couple on the side and so forth. And people often make the anthropological point, you know, often, you know, this is kind of what we were like. from a spiritual point, and I'm not trying to say what anyone should or shouldn't do, but I'm just trying to give people all of the points of awareness. If you have a conscious relationship, something that you and I learned in our previous podcast with Elisa, it was an amazing show.
Amazing. Probably be two shows and we'll have
her
back.
We'll have her back. Yeah, consistently for sure. And Rich as well. But going deep with someone consciously is a way to grow. You know, now you could grow going wide as well, but the depth and the meaning derived from one person, that's the positive side from it, you know? So you can get those breakthroughs and those points of awareness, but you do have to sacrifice alternative options and opportunities. And I think something that Simon Sinek talks about is that there's always going to be an opportunity cost in life. You can't always have all of just the good stuff.
Yeah.
So choosing your opportunity costs is the main thing here.
Absolutely. And that's like the that's the reward. It's like knowing that you are foregoing something that could be short-term pleasure, for example, to play the long game, to be able to nourish, let's use what you were talking about earlier, to be able to nourish a relationship that you're choosing to devote your life physically and spiritually towards, that nourishes your choice even more. This this opportunity cost that you make, it's like, because you're foregoing having three different partners to be able to invest yourself consciously in this. And I'm once again, you know, this is just me, you know, speaking from my own experience. That adds to the value of the decision that you're making, the short-term pain or discomfort.
Yeah, totally. And you know, to your point before about, you know, you and I having decided to walk down a path of monogamy, I think what comes back to it again is whatever you're trying to gain from life, you know, and you and I, we see life as a curriculum of the self. Giant classroom. You can do it kind of any way you want. If you wanted to, you know, just play the field and be single and do that, you could use each sexual interaction or romantic interaction as a vessel for growth. What did this teach me about this? Why was I closing my eyes when we're having sex? Whatever it is, you know. But back to the point, I think we can apply the point of being bored, but seeing the value in allowing ourselves to be bored to then come to greater self-awareness is in switching off all of those things to go deep into the self to then find truths. And even from a less esoteric perspective, when the mind is too distracted, we get anxious. You know, so we'll just cut all the spiritual bullshit for a second, as much as I love it. Anxiety is a major player in today's world because there's just too much for the brain to take in. The brain is always saying, is this safe? Is this not safe? That's what it is designed to do. And most of the stuff that we're talking about here is safe.
Yes.
But the brain needs time to process all of that, you know?
Absolutely. And I think in today's world that we live in, especially, you know, we were talking about relationships. If you're finding that you are bored in your relationship, you know, use that as an opportunity to kind of look within and also to be able to be open, honest and vulnerable with your partner and say, you know, how can we explore this relationship to either A, appreciate the stillness and B, kind of then use that as a point to, you know, to maybe move and grow together and explore the relationship even further.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more, man. I think what a really powerful point of awareness is exactly what you just said. When you're feeling bored, have a think about your own unmet needs, you know, because if you are feeling bored, well, then the problem lies within by definition. And that's great. It's difficult to come to realize. But it's also liberating because if it's your problem, then you can change it, you know, and that's powerful. And you can regain that agency. You know, it's like, if I'm bored in a relationship, well, it's like, well, my partner needs to change. It's like, well, that may or may not be true, but now the power lies with her and you can't do anything and you're the victim of that circumstance.
Yeah, you're powerless. I 100% agree with you. And I mean, I'd go as far to say that any circumstance you find yourself in life, the only empowering way, and some people, you know, some people in this world have been dealt a very, very challenging hand, right? Where I look at you and I look at me, we are white, privileged,
totally,
you know, men that are growing up in a world that definitely favors all of the hands that we have naturally been dealt.
Mm-hmm.
But the only way that I can rationalize moving forward in life is to be able to look at the way you discussed it by saying, what can I do to be able to change the situation that I have been put in or I have chosen to put myself in?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I've touched on that point a lot in podcasts and speaking with colleagues and so forth. And the whole thing about, you know, social change versus personal responsibility. Once again, the answer lies within the gray, you know. The point that really helped me feel like I could speak on that was reading Viktor Frankl, who found himself in arguably the worst situation imaginable, where he had every right to blame everyone else for his suffering, because everyone else was putting a tremendous amount of pain onto himself, his family, the entire Jewish community, as obviously you're a part of, mate. But the thing is, what he found was that given that he was in that circumstance, as troubling as it was for him, you know, seeing himself as a free agent to the best of his ability was one of the major contributors to him. And, you know, you don't want to be like, oh, well, if he hadn't have done that, then he might have gone out, because, you know, there's so much luck with what the atrocities of the Holocaust. But at least that thing of, it's so important for me to finish this manuscript, which I think became The Doctor and the Soul, 1945.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had the manuscript taken off him in the beginning when the, what do they call him, the Dark Angel, what was his name, who tested on all of the twins.
Mengele. Doctor of Death.
Yeah. So he, you know, I'm fascinated by the Holocaust, and he stood there at the train and he would go like this for people off to the gas chambers and then others for work and so forth. I think Viktor Frankl's manuscript was in his jacket or something. Anyway, he was so determined to finish that manuscript that it led to this idea of logotherapy, a purpose pulling you forward. Who knows, you know, maybe there was many other people, in fact I'm sure there were, who passed that had this idea of purpose as well. So we're not going to say luck wasn't involved in it, but even when you're in that circumstance, you know, it would be, I can imagine it would be better for your sense of self to go, what can I do? You know, and maybe what you can do as well is lead the charge in social activism. But you want to feel empowered in this life, and it doesn't have to be, well, because you come from privilege, therefore you don't know what it's like and you can't talk about it. Because even though that is true to a degree, it doesn't lead to any sense of fulfillment.
Absolutely. And it also doesn't lead to having just an open conversation
with
as many people. And I feel like that's almost like a dying art form. A lot of people aren't able to have just open conversations with one another and say things and perhaps be corrected and say, right, oh, I hadn't thought of it that way. That's an amazing way to think of the way the world works, you know?
Part of the thing that you and I are opening ourselves up to for this show and having been podcasters for years is social critique, which I am super open to. If anyone vehemently disagrees with anything I've just said, then please, you know, comment on the show. Let us know. Do it in a kind way, because being a human being, if you just attack me, I'm my walls will go up. So I'm probably going to be less inclined to be able to engage in that. But I want to learn.
I agree. And yeah, respectful engagement is always the way to go about it. And I think you and I, you know, use that as a foundation for our communication piece. And we're always open to dialogue and conversation and criticism if it's done respectfully. And so if anyone does have any feedback,
for sure,
bring it on.
Hey, the entire show. But here, I'm going to tell you why. No worries, Dad.
to tie all of this back into, you know, boredom and silence, you know, using that as a platform to be able to contemplate and to be able to think and to be able to create, you know, thought eggs that you can kind of flesh out and grow. I think silence is going to be a great opportunity in today's day and age for everybody, and me definitely included, because I feel like I have really struggled with being silent at times. And to be able to, you know, instead of going to that podcast that I want to listen to because, you know, it's entertaining, but it's also populating that those spaces in between the notes, you know, let's become a little bit more refined in our thought processes and have a little bit more space, because we can really, really, you know, kind of use that as an opportunity to grow.
Love it. Brilliant, Paulie, as always, mate. Talk to you soon. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.